This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
As we head into the 7 o'clock hour, voice guy's got to stop pausing. He needs to just stop shimmy shaking. I'm like Robert Covington. He gets me in the air every time, and then I come crash landing on him, and he gets to shoot 3 free throws.
I like how we can pretend like he's doing that live every time.
Yeah. I'm going to go strangle the guy during the break.
We've had huge cutbacks everywhere because of COVID, but we will not relinquish having the live voice guy every
right.
single break.
No, it's what the people want. You know?
That'll be the last guy employed.
That's right. He'll turn the lights out when it's all over. Real quick, we just got done talking about DeAndre Hopkins. He had 14 catches for the Cardinals yesterday. If you're just waking up, he's still good at football. Seth, I didn't realize this. Joel Corey, who's a former agent and who does analysis of different contracts when they're signed, and is really good on the business side of football, if you're into that sort of thing. He just sort of haphazardly dropped this into his analysis of DeAndre Hopkins' contract, which, by the way, is a really, really well-constructed deal. DeAndre and the group that he surrounded himself with did an amazing job negotiating this extension. He said this: Hopkins has aspirations of becoming a general manager once his playing days are over. He hit a grand slam home run in his first foray into the NFL business world. Some of the concessions, and then I'm like, then all of a sudden, like, I got to that, and I'm like, there's a record scratch. Like, I'm like, wait a second. Hopkins has aspirations of becoming a general manager. Now, look, not that I don't think he could become a general manager. He could probably be a very good general manager. He's a very, very smart football player. He's a very smart dude. He's experienced a lot of things in the NFL, both good and bad, contractually and from a business perspective. I just had no idea that he had aspirations of becoming a GM to the point where Corey just drops it in there like we should all know this sort of thing.
The only way, I'll go to two quarterbacks that both went from playing careers to being executives for their teams.
Okay.
And I'm going to be honest with you, both of them surprised me in how it ultimately worked out. John Elway, for one. John Elway had a successful car dealership while he was a player. I think it was a company that became CarMax, or he got bought out by CarMax, whatever it was. He ended up selling that thing it was a lot of money, Sean.
Yeah.
So he was successful in business, but you never know. You know, a lot of times that's just a guy lending his name to something. But I never would have expected, like, John Elway, who had a pretty good reputation as a guy that enjoyed having a good time, that he would like just digging in and diving in to be a general manager where you're working these ridiculously long hours, you got all the stress, everything. And he's lasted a whole long time doing that, won a Super Bowl. You could argue that he hasn't done all that great since the Super Bowl, but whatever. And then Dan Marino, who went the exact opposite course. I would have thought Dan Marino would step into, was he the general manager? It was a front office. It was some kind of front office.
I want to say
role.
It was like a vice president or president's title. It was like a bigger title. Didn't he quit after like one day?
It seemed like it was 3 weeks. I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks when he said, whoa, 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 whoa. Showing up to an office wearing a tie and coat every day. Screw this.
Yeah.
I'm going to go live the life that this Isotoner endorsement has afforded me.
Hell yeah.
And just kick it in South Florida. So I think it's never as much about aptitude or intelligence or anything else. When the first and foremost requirement is that somebody is capable of just sitting in an office for 12 hours a day and then going out on the road and scouting guys and everything. There's a whole lot of drudgery involved in being a really good general manager. There's a whole lot of drudgery involved in being a good coach in the NFL. Like, that's one of it. It's an actual skill. Like, what is your capacity for drudgery? Because you just got to grind and grind and grind. So DeAndre doesn't strike me as the guy, like, he strikes me as a guy that wants to experience all that life has to offer. And I don't know if that's compatible with being a GM.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here, Seth. Dan Marino, in early 2004, Marino briefly returned to the Miami Dolphins as senior VP of football operations. So he basically was the Jack Easterby of the Miami Dolphins, but resigned from the newly created position only, you nailed it, 3 weeks later, saying that the role was not in the best interest of either his family or the Dolphin organization. Basically, the way I read that, he's like, look, I got to be honest with you. I've done this for 3 weeks. I really suck at this. This is not in the best interest of your organization me doing this job.
Either that, or maybe he realized that he was just a mascot. Maybe he realized that whoever's in charge at that point just was saying, like, yeah, give Dan a nice office with a view and everything.
Right.
We'll even give him somebody who's unqualified but is could be called a secretary.
That's
we'll give him a secretary too.
Yeah.
I think that now this is what DeAndre has going for him, which is the same thing Cliff Kingsbury has going for him. It is possible to live the life you choose and enjoy. And also work the long hours that being a coach or an executive in the NFL requires if you are completely single.
Yeah.
So as long as DeAndre is completely single and unattached, then it's like, who cares if you're working until 9 p.m. in March?
Yeah.
Because you got no other obligations. You can go do whatever you want after that. You can just go learn Spanish.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to put a bow on that. DeAndre Hopkins apparently wants to be a GM when it's all said and done. Shifting gears here real quick on a reaction Monday on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610, and just teasing ahead a little bit. Next segment, Seth is going to give his thoughts on the rewatch of Thursday night's game. So if you want to hear what a verbal, emotional autopsy sounds like of a dead person, a carcass that is a 34-20 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, stay tuned for the next segment. I did want to drop this in with respect to the Astros, who had an amazing win on Saturday, 5 runs against Kenley Jansen in the top of the 9th inning to get maybe the biggest win of the year, and then followed that up with Zach Greinke getting shelled last night and losing 8-1 to the Dodgers. But the only news that matters right now, if you're an Astro fan, is what is the update on Justin Verlander? Because if they're not going to do anything in the postseason, if Justin Verlander is not at least a small part of what it is they're looking to do, here is the update from Dusty Baker.
You know, I heard it went well. I think he threw 55, 60 pitches. And then his next timeout, he's supposed to maybe throw against some hitters. So that's a very, very positive sign. You know, he's been working his butt off. And I'm sure knowing him, he's trying everything he can to get back to help us.
All right, so that's Dusty Baker on Justin Verlander. So he's been, Seth, slowly ramping up the workload that he's been taking on. Eventually, it sounds like from Dusty Baker, his next session hopefully is with some hitters in the batter's box. The big question I have about Verlander has nothing to do with this year. I want to know if the injury that he has is something that's going to keep him out for 2021. You know, is this a McCullough situation where there's something wrong with the UCL, where there's something wrong with his elbow that requires Tommy John, but he can gut his way through it if this team can get into the postseason and feel like they can make a run in the postseason? That's what I'm more curious about 2021 with Verlander than I am about 2020 with Verlander, because I don't know that this team's equipped right now. Like, I don't know how I feel about this team right now.
Well, I think that, for one, they've been calling it forearm, which I don't know. I never get the sense that baseball is as demanding as football is when it comes to some kind of accuracy or specificity with their injury reports. But I would imagine they would be calling it elbow discomfort if it was a UCL. I don't think you can get away with calling it forearm discomfort or a forearm strain. So that's the part that makes me optimistic for it. I also think that with a UCL, I don't think he would have tried to pitch through the postseason with the UCL, just because at his age especially, like, he's not young Lance McCullers. I think that puts the recovery time up too close to the 2022 season.
Mm.
You know, if I'm Justin Verlander and approach, you know, into my late 30s, I'm going to want to be sure that I've got as much leeway as possible if I'm going to have a UCL surgery. I don't think I would have attempted to play this season at potentially the expense of not being ready come April or May of 2022. So I'm with my fingers crossed, both for the Astros' sake and for Justin Verlander's sake. I don't think it's probably a partially torn UCL.
I hope that's not the obviously 2021. We want Justin Verlander around for 2021. Yeah, I wonder, Seth, you know, certain guys are wired certain ways. I do wonder if they're, even if it's a UCL tear, even if it's a McCullough situation, if Justin Verlander feels like, look, I'm making $33 million a year and feels some degree of guilt over if I can make it back out there under any circumstance, I need to make it back out there. I'm the highest paid guy on the team right now. I've got to be back out there for my teammates.
Yes. And there is, I mean, and that's the dividing line, I guess, is can I get something out of this season and the postseason here and give something, even like whether it's for the good of his organization or just for himself personally, and then still thread the needle and try to get back by 2022 with the Tommy, if it had to be Tommy John, hypothetically, then I could see that side of it too. I just don't, right now, psychologically, Sean, after having been through everything we've been through with the Astros at this point, I just have no space in my brain or my heart to tease myself with Justin Verlander coming in and being lights out in the playoffs. Yeah. I'm just going to, if that happens, it's going to be like an early Christmas, but I can't go there as it being something that we're depending on.
Yeah, well, it's worth pointing out, Zach Greinke has been terrible his last two or three starts. He has not been good. So the guy who was looking like the ace that he'd been for most of his career, it's come unraveled a little bit for him lately. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. The young bullpen, not a good bullpen.
Nobody's
starters have pitched more innings than the Astros, and yet it has not helped out the bullpen at all. And I can't blame or hate any of them. It's all because of either injury or youth that we're in this situation.
Yep.
And all Jeff Luhnow.
So is Seth Payne more angry or less angry after rewatching Thursday night's Texans debacle? He rewatched it over the weekend. We will find out. Brace yourselves. We will find out next. All right, so Seth Payne did the Lord's work this weekend. He rewatched the Chiefs and the Texans from Thursday night.
Yeah. Mind you, this wasn't the All-22 because it wasn't out yet. It might be out now, but they've been ridiculously slow with it. I don't know what's going on.
It comes out on Tuesday. You use the one on Game Pass?
Yeah.
It comes out on Tuesdays.
Even for the Thursday night games, though?
Yeah, all the games, they come out on Tuesdays. I think it's so that certain teams who played earlier in the week don't have their All-22 out there longer than other teams, that kind of thing.
But that's dumb. I mean, every team in the league has access to it almost immediately.
Don't shoot the messenger, Seth. I'm just telling you what it
extra,
is.
Yeah. You think that I bet teams like the Bengals are just watching blogs and stuff and using that as their advanced scouting.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't. Maybe I just heard somewhere. Maybe I'm telling myself that's the reason. I can tell you as a loyal subscriber to Game Pass, you do have to wait till Tuesday to get the All-22. So
I guess I had never noticed that on the Thursday night. I'm being found out.
Yeah. So there you go. But you rewatched this debacle.
I watched this, because there's the old saying that it's never as bad as you thought and it's never as good as you thought. Okay. And you have a huge win.
Does that apply? Go back
and you watch. And you're like, oh, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. It was worse than I thought. It actually was genuinely worse than I thought. I wasn't as disgusted during the game because, look, I expected the Texans to lose. I didn't expect them to lose as thoroughly and resoundingly as they did, but I expected them to lose. It was when I went back and watched and saw these unforgivable errors on both sides of the ball, but particularly on the offensive line, that I felt like I'd been wronged personally, because I was one of the people that, along with a cacophony of other voices, said, oh yeah, well look, you can actually feel good about the offensive line going into this season. I couldn't have been more wrong. You should feel bad about the offensive line right now. You should feel really, really bad, because at least before, they had the excuse of just not having good athletes or good players on the offensive line. These are good athletes and potentially good players doing really bad things. They looked woefully unprepared. And I'll include in that, in the pass protection, the tight ends, didn't carry their water. I think you could go across the line with the offensive line, with the tight ends, and point out to an egregiously bad block at various points in this game, almost to a man. Darren Fells got so thoroughly whooped by Tyrann Mathieu.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Darren Fells is like 270 pounds.
Yeah, Darren Fells is 270 pounds.
Honey Badger's smaller than me.
He's 176, Sean.
Yeah.
He gives up. He doesn't give up a full 100 pounds to Darren Fells. But so there's a safety blitz, and this is on the Deshaun Watson interception in the third quarter. There's a safety blitz, but Deshaun is thinking, well, yeah, we got that covered. The protection covers it. So as long as Darren Fells picks up Tyrann Mathieu, then that's it, right? Because this is how it works with DB blitzes. If they can get in and stay free and loose, or maybe get matched up against a running back at full speed or a tight end at full speed, then all right, they've got a shot at it. But if a big man, if a 270-pound man gets his hands on Tyrann Mathieu, that should be it. You should be shaking him like you found out he kissed your sister or something. Like, this is what Darren Fells should have driven Tyrann Mathieu into the dirt on this play. And no, Tyrann Mathieu looked like a pass rushing master. Like, he took, Sean, it was like Tyrann Mathieu took like a one-on-one pass rushing drill versus Darren Fells. This wasn't even a blitz at the end of the day. Tyrann Mathieu might as well have just lined up as a wide nine defensive end, and he hump moved Darren Fells. It was ridiculous. It was absurd. And it doesn't end there. I mean, the mental errors. Laremy Tunsil, first off, he starts off the game with an offsides or a false start. I'm disgusted because just last week I had gone back and reviewed some of my old film breakdowns from KHOU Sports Extra on Sunday nights, and we broke down the game where Laremy Tunsil was all besides himself because he thought the refs were calling him out unfairly.
Target on his back.
He actually got away with a false start in that game. Yeah, when he said that he had a target on his back. Like, he actually got away with a false start in that game. So he kind of gets away with a false start in this game because Titus Howard false started before he did. But then there's a play where it looked like the Texans offensive line from 2013 through 2018. He buries his head going down to help out the guard and just completely ignores a defensive lineman looping around to his responsibility and hit Deshaun Watson. Just stuff that high school kids should be better than and figure it out. It was really, really bad. And then on some of the run plays, Sean, these guys just got their butts handed to them. And now David Johnson had some nice runs, largely because at times the opponent just didn't give a damn about stopping the run. They had six guys in the box. There were run plays where three, four offensive linemen were getting knocked back behind the line of scrimmage. And this is the important part. Did not look like they even gave a damn. Titus Howard is standing around watching like he's an observer. Like, oh, isn't this a pleasant display of football out here? Yeah, it's a good defensive effort because you guys don't look like you give a damn. It was disgusting. It was ridiculous, Sean.
Seth, who do you blame for that? Is that a player thing? Is it a coaching thing? Is it a combination of the two?
It's got to be coaching at this point. Look, the Chiefs are a better... The Chiefs are a better team than the Texans. Don't get me wrong. The Chiefs are a much better team than the Texans. But the Chiefs also actually looked like they were prepared to play football. Yeah. The Texans did not look like they were prepared to play football. Which is, I mean, you had an entire training camp to get ready for this one game. At the very least, look like you actually give a damn.
Yeah,
it was really, like, Titus Howard's really got to get his act together. He looked like a guy that doesn't know what it takes to play in the NFL.
Wow. Especially a team that embarrassed you the last time that you saw them. They outscored you 51-7 in playoffs.
Watson was under pressure on 45% of his single drop backs.
45%?
Yeah, so and this is the important thing. This was not like last year or previous years when some of the time or many of the times it was in previous years it was that Deshaun was holding onto the ball too long. This was just bad pass protection. There's just no way around it. It was just really bad pass protection. There's only one pressure I think that would probably be attributed to him.
Wow.
And I'll tell you another thing. There was one of his scrambles in the first half. Looked like a classic example of Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly trying to be clever, but then the play not working out at all. You'll recall Deshaun turned to his left and acted like he was pulling the ball down on a screen. It was going to be some kind of a two-way screen where he threw the ball, and I think it was Will Fuller. Will Fuller acted like it was a bad pass to try to distract people. Deshaun turns, and there's nobody there for him to either throw to, or it was supposed to be a designed quarterback run, but Nick Martin was the only kid that went down running downfield like he was blocking downfield. So they're on a different page there. There were various other times in the offense where they just weren't on the same page. It looked, after they got off script, it looked like so much of the same old, well, they're going to try something completely new this game plan because they're a game plan offense, but they're not going to be able to pull any of it off.
That's on the offensive side. Seth, what did you see on the defensive side of the ball that got you the most either irritated, concerned, whatever emotion moved you?
The thing that annoyed me the most was, remember that promo we were running where I was saying, like, hey, Zach Cunningham is very close to being a genuinely elite inside linebacker. Yeah. He just has to get better in pass coverage. He's got to figure out pass coverage because that's the thing that's holding him back. He's incredible versus the run, yeah. But pass coverage.
What's the verdict?
There he was again, doing the same thing, like nowhere to be found, making any plays on the ball. And it's not that. It's fine. It's one thing if you're in zone and you're an inside linebacker. Look, Travis Kelce is going to get his. But could you at least be present at the catch? Could you at least make a tackle when the ball is caught over the middle? This is going to be another year. If they don't fix this and fix this fast, it's going to be another year where offenses feast on the middle of the field versus those clunky inside linebackers. And this is what I'm starting to suspect as well with Zach Cunningham. Yes, he's incredible versus the run. You know what? Maybe every now and then, don't be so obsessed with the run that you're not getting deep enough in coverage. I think he spends too much of his time lurking near the line of scrimmage, and that's why he doesn't get back in coverage as quickly as he should. There are times where people want to blame the safeties or cornerbacks on a ball being caught. Sometimes it's that the inside linebacker isn't expanding his zone enough. He's given the safety too much room to cover. And that's exactly what happens with Zach Cunningham. I guess the only thing I could say about him where it works out, at least in terms of why the public seems to like him so much and love him so much, it's that he's so far away from the catch when he's supposed to be there that nobody blames him for his bad coverage.
They don't see
mistakes.
Him. He's not in the
yeah.
view.
Like, dude, this is what the Texans paid him for. I mean, this is what they paid him for. Is that, like, this is what he was last year, and now this is what he is this year. I would say and also, honestly, a certain level of disinterest on his part, too, when things didn't go the Texans' way. I did not like the body language of the Texans on either side of the ball. And I'm not a body language guy. But those guys just flat out didn't look like they wanted to be out there. And some of them were paid quite well to be there, Sean.
Well, that's my biggest fear with this defense, Seth, is just it's poorly constructed from a resource allocation standpoint. You're spending $40 million a year on Whitney Mercilus, Zach Cunningham, Bernardrick McKinney, and I'll throw in Brennan Scarlett since he's the other starting outside linebacker. You know, you're paying him $2 or $3 million a year when he was a scrap heap guy. So that's $43-44 million a year on four largely, in today's day and age, lumbering, big, non-playmaking linebackers. They don't make plays.
Cunningham makes plays versus the run. Which is great, I suppose, but when you're playing the Chiefs, who honestly could give, oh my gosh. Oh, it's all, and then the tackling, well, like we already discussed the tackling. They've got to get better at that. I think they will get better at that. Yeah. But my goodness, you're right, Sean. Randall Cobb, quick note. Until I get to all 22, I'm not going to watch Randall Cobb because I tried to watch on the TV copy, and frankly, and this is the important thing, he's too hard to find.
Because he's a wee little person, or because he wasn't making plays?
Oh, let me see. Maybe I should just instead look for the slowest wide receiver. Okay, there he is.
Number 18.
There's Randall Cobb. Yeah. Is that Kiki QT? Oh, no, he's inactive, and he's actually fast.
Right?
Yeah.
No. And he's making about $7 million a year less than Randall Cobb. Yeah.
Somebody responded to me and said, after one of my Randall Cobb tweets, and said, hey, look, you expect a few of these free agent workouts not to work out. Like, yeah, I get that. I understand that. But also understand that you paid Randall Cobb way more than anybody thought he was worth.
Right.
He got paid 1 year, $5 million last year by the Dallas Cowboys. It's not like you're catching some guy, young guy in his prime or something. So, no, this is one of those free agency deals. If it doesn't work out, it's completely on Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby. 100%.
We've got headlines coming up in the next segment. Where do the Rockets go from here with their head coaching position? The Astros kind of a lost weekend. Pick up college football games being basically just drummed up at the last second. And we'll take a look around the NFL. How did former Texans do, not just Hopkins, but other former Texans do in week one of the NFL season? That's all next. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Murray, pressure coming. Open is Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins with running room inside the 10. Hopkins inside the 5. Touchdown. Arizona back on top.
Actually, probably the only thing that may have happened that was a saving grace for the Hopkins trade being what it was this week or this weekend was the fact that would-be touchdown right there for the Arizona Cardinals, the would-be game-winning touchdown, actually got called back because DeAndre Hopkins was down at like the two-inch line. So Kenyon Drake ended up running into the end zone for the touchdown. Yeah. Did not stop DeAndre Hopkins from having 14 catches for a buck 51 yesterday, Seth. One of several former Texans around the league that were either making their debut or making their next appearance. There were a lot of guys from last year's team that were making their debut around the league, including another guy who got cut. Well, not another guy who got cut. A guy who got cut at the roster, 53-man roster cutdown, who also became an Arizona Cardinal. Did you happen to see Angelo Blackson outdid his entire sack total from the last 2 years in one game with the Arizona Cardinals? He had a sack in a TFL for the Cardinals yesterday. I got the game on the TV, and I'm looking, I'm going, Blackson, oh, wait, that's Angelo Blackson, and he's jumping around celebrating a sack.
Texans didn't even trade him. They could have. They just let him go, which is fine. Like, I honestly, the Angelo Blackson, Brandon Dunn contracts were one I didn't understand why both those guys were on the roster.
I didn't either, and I'll say this, and part of this is just piling on right now because it's easy to do, and good for Blackson. Like, he always seemed like a pretty good dude. I hope he has great success in Arizona. They cut Angelo Blackson ostensibly so they could keep P.J. Hall, who's kind of a penny stock on the roster. And P.J. Hall, we didn't get to that in the last segment, but on your rewatch, you liked what you saw out of P.J. Hall.
Oh, yeah, that was my positive. I did have some positives at the back of there. I was supposed to lift everybody up after that. Yeah. P.J. Hall is a positive.
He will be our savior, P.J. Hall.
He's got some genuine potential, which I always thought when he was in college. As an FCS guy, I was very intrigued by him. I wanted to see how it would work out for him. And frankly, I think in Oakland, he was playing at too heavy a body weight. He looks like he's trimmed down a little bit, and we'll see how he works out.
Yeah, you know who hasn't trimmed down really very much? Randy Bullock, kicker for the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals were in a tussle with the Chargers yesterday in Cincinnati. It was one of the late games, and the Chargers had a late 16-13 lead. And credit Joe Burrow. He drives the Bengals, gets them into field goal range, would have sent the game to overtime. And then, unfortunately, this is what happened.
Harris will snap. Huber will hold from the right hash. Bullock 2 for 2 so far today. The snap is good. The kick is wide right.
Oh,
he missed it.
Oh,
and the Chargers hold on to the lead with 2 seconds to go. And Bullock is hurt.
I'm telling you.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you talk about a knuckleball. That's unbelievable.
Dump it. We got to dump it.
Oh, my gosh.
Dump it.
Take it down, Ben. Turn the volume down.
Dump it.
Yeah, he dumped it. Yeah. Okay, was that cursing going on in the background?
Yeah, there was like 8 F-bombs.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. When I listened to it during the show, I just heard screaming. I didn't hear what was
going on. Yeah, that was a whole lot of F-bombs there.
Wow, okay. Yeah, my bad.
You need to add some calories. You've lost too much weight, Sean.
I haven't.
Your hearing is distorted.
Hearing.
Everything sounds like you're underwater.
It's affected my hearing. Yeah, so Randy.
Body is swimming in ketones.
Randy Bullock, Seth, if I had to pick a kicker who would pull a calf muscle on a 31-yard field goal, I hate to say this, it feels like bullying a little bit, but I would pick Randy Bullock. He'd be at the. It was some sort of leg injury.
Was it the calf muscle on his plant leg? Was it his plant leg or his swing leg?
I don't remember. I was too busy. I was too busy with my hands on my head, going, I can't believe what I just saw. Randy Bullock pulling a muscle on a potential game tying field goal.
That's the best way to do it, though, isn't it? I mean, maybe he would have missed that anyway, and then he wouldn't have the excuse of a pulled muscle.
Yeah.
I always feel bad. I know a lot of times people like to. Yeah, they like to make fun of kickers when they get injured because, hey, that's all you have to do.
Right.
Yeah, but that's all they have to do. So when there's any kind of an injury at all, it really messes it up. Right. I mean, Randy Bullock, Tiger Woods, same scenario, basically.
Same exact thing. Other former Texans around the league yesterday, DJ Reed, in that same game, there were actually a lot of former Texans playing in that game. Xavier Suofilo is a starting guard for the Bengals now. He left the game with an ankle injury. I'm gonna wait till he likes one of my tweets to see if he's okay.
He follows you, right?
Follow me, but he's liking a lot of my tweets lately. And it's him. It's a blue check mark, Xavier Suofilo.
Somebody must be forwarding or retweeting your tweets, and he likes
Maybe.
Them. Is he liking any of the negative ones, or is it just when you have positive comments?
It's really neither. They're very innocuous tweets, and Xavier Suofilo is is liking them. It's very strange. But DJ Reader,
he might have, you know what, maybe he has some kind of brand manager or something.
Maybe.
And that person's out there sucking up the media members.
Xavier Suofilo needs to be worried about his brand.
He should. It's a cool name.
A lot of people banging down the door. It is
a cool name. He's got a brand just by virtue of his name. He's got the best acronym, XFO. Are you kidding me? It's awesome.
And his flowing locks, too, out the back of his helmet. And he may have cut his hair, though. DJ Reader made his debut. He, too, got injured in that game. Three former Texans, all three suffered lower leg injuries in that game. How weird is that? Xavier Suofilo, ankle. Randy Bullock, some muscle. And DJ Reader, as it turned out, it was cramps. But he had to be carted off of the field. Let me say this. People need to stop using the phrase so-and-so was carted off of the field. There's a difference between being carted off of the field and riding a cart off of the field. Carted off means you have a debilitating season-ending injury. Rode a cart means you had a cramp. He had a cramp.
No, I would say riding a cart's significant enough because you can walk off with an ACL or something. Sometimes if it's I feel like that's notable enough.
All right. Carlos Hyde, he did some good things for the Seahawks.
Second down and goal from the one. Carlos Hyde is in! Touchdown, Seahawks!
There you go. Carlos Hyde got into the end zone yesterday, Seth.
I didn't. You know, I watched very little of the Seahawks game yesterday. I guess because it was they took care of it pretty quickly, didn't they?
Yeah.
I mean,
they got up on the Falcons, and then they just kind of cruise the ship into the harbor.
I've got some kind of psychological block with the Falcons. I don't know, and it goes back to before their Super Bowl collapse. I can never take them seriously as a football team.
Yeah.
And I can't bring myself to watch them.
I'll just put a bow on this. Ryan Fitzpatrick threw three picks, and Tashaun Gipson got beat for a touchdown by TJ Hockenson. Tashaun Gipson played for the Bears now, by the way, for those who didn't know. So all right, Seth, so it's Monday here. It's Reaction Monday. We've spent the last couple days on the air reacting to the Texans in the Chiefs. Your rewatch of it did not do anything to quell my fears that this football team is not very good right now.
Yeah, somebody on the text line was complaining that I'm not a very good motivational speaker. Said like I'm like the van down by the river guy. If you thought that was motivational mode, then I feel bad for like whoever the influences in your life have been. Is that what your thought of an idea of a motivational speaker is? My God.
Yeah.
Your abusive childhood. I feel bad for you.
What's our concern level as of Monday right now? You know, we haven't had any press conferences yet. There have been no practices this week. There's been no rewatch of the Ravens and the Browns game, although I'm guessing there's very little in there that's going to make us feel better about the game on Sunday with the Ravens. But Seth, you rewatched the Texans' performance. You've been involved in good and bad performances in your 10 years in the league. How easy a performance is that to kind of put in the rear view, especially considering who the opponent is and what they did to you last year coming up this weekend?
I think it's easy enough. Like, I don't know. I have to ask more guys about this. I don't know if I ever went into a game in the NFL thinking like, oh boy, we're going to get our asses beat. I think if you've got any kind of let's see. I probably did a couple times. But for the most part, especially early in the season.
You are a cockeyed optimist, my friend.
Well, no. I mean, because individually you don't go into a game thinking like, think about all the different, very few guys in the NFL go into a game thinking like, well, this guy across the line of scrimmage from me is just going to beat my ass today.
Yeah.
Like, that's not your mindset going into a game individually. And I think as a team goes too, you might be concerned, but like, it's week one and they've come back from bludgeonings before. Think about the Jaguars game a couple years back after Harvey. That was a bad beginning to that season. And it wasn't like it was just because Tom Savage had started. The offensive line just got completely wrecked. And then they came back from that. Part of it was they had Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
So I think that it's just a matter of getting back out, and I think they'll have an extra day to make corrections. I think the great thing is that they've got a lot of really good film to say, like, look, this is really bad. Like, this isn't parsing things or like nitpicking or anything. They can put up several examples from that play, from that game, and say, this is really, really bad. This is unacceptable. You're going to lose your job very quickly if you do this again. And it's those kinds of changes, like, guys, they're capable of playing much better than they did in that game in week one. So the problem is that they're going against the Ravens this week. So I don't think they're going to win this week, but I think they'll play better.
Yeah, I mean, is there a scenario where we feel better about the team coming out of this if they lose? Like, is it possible? It's, I mean, it sounds like the biggest loser mentality of all time. But as you've pointed out, it's a long season. I don't think a lot of people were expecting them to be anything but 0-2 after these two games because of who they were playing. If you know, they go in and the final score is 31-27 Ravens, do people feel better heading to Pittsburgh the next week? Or is it just same old Texans again?
Yeah, no, I think very easily, as long as you compete in this game. If it's an actual game in the fourth quarter, then at this point in the season, I don't care if it's a loser's mentality. You've got some work to do. And what they were in game one was not a good football team. I don't care if they're playing the Kansas City Chiefs. Remember that the Chiefs have an incredible quarterback and they've got an incredible compilation of talent, but there were games last year where they had to compete with guys, including when Pat Mahomes was healthy. I mean, go through the entire playoff run. They're a hell of a football team, but at the very least put up a fight. And I think the Texans are capable of putting up a fight. If they put up a fight alone by that criteria, it's going to be an improvement.
Seth, I got to go back and look. This might be my project for today. Is we sit here and talk about this. If football were a prize fight, okay, and instead of final scores of games being the thing that you were judged by how many quarters you won, okay? Stay with me here for a second. I think you could go back as far as the Patriots game in Week 13 last year and go, man, the Texans have probably lost 85 to 90% of the quarters that they've played in. Now, the week after the Patriots game was the week they got destroyed by the Broncos. So that's a game where they just got destroyed almost from beginning to end. The next 2 weeks they won against the Titans and the Bucks on the road, but those were games where they needed massive momentum swinging plays just to win by a field goal in those games. You know, they needed that merciless 88-yard pick at the goal line just to stem the tide. They needed Jameis Winston to throw 3, 4, 5 interceptions just to eke out a 3-point win. And then you get to the postseason, the Bills game. Man, the Bills dominated most of that game until the fourth quarter. You get to the Chiefs game, the Texans dominated the first quarter, but then it was Katie bar the door after that, and then they didn't win any of the quarters, in my opinion, in the game on Thursday. I mean, Seth, you got to go back to the first half of the Patriots game to get to a point where they put 30 minutes of good football together, let alone 60 minutes of good football.
But Sean, you're forgetting this one simple thing.
What?
You've eliminated the major problem, which was DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
So, because
get rid of that cancer.
You see, Sean, you can't have a consistent offense with DeAndre Hopkins on the team. You got to get rid of him.
Yeah,
you can't
layers of misery.
They'll be much better with inferior players, okay, Sean? It's like good in 2016.
Now I'm getting angry. They have not played a good complete football game. Listen.
This is where the offensive line has really got a lot on its shoulders. This team cannot get to where Bill O'Brien wants it to be if the offensive line plays the way it did in week one. And I don't think the Chiefs offense is as good as the Ravens. I don't think the Chiefs defense is as good as the Ravens or the Steelers defense. So that's where they've got to get a whole lot better really, really fast. I'm glad they have an extra couple days of practice to do all this. You know, the Ravens are just going to have their normal Monday today where the Texans will be practicing and game planning for the Ravens. So they need all of that, but there are no bones about it. This offensive line underperformed. The young players need to remember that they're not rookies anymore, and there are certain things that are unacceptable. And then, frankly, just a certain amount of pride in understanding and recognizing that you got your butts whipped. Yep. It wasn't just the mental errors. It's that you got physically handled. You stole weight room equipment and then got pushed around all over the field. You looked like you never used that weight room equipment that you took home.
Before we get to headlines, I want to thank everybody who was part of our effort to raise money for the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation. The final tally, we raised $66,551. And when I say we, I don't mean we as a station. I mean we as a station and you, everybody who contributed to that, everybody who spread the word, everybody who shared something on social media, and especially some of the big names that stepped up. South Fork Chrysler Dodge, Jim Adler and Associates, McRee Ford, Phillips 66, who matched $25,000 worth of the donations, $66,551. That's thousands of kids who are going to get books into their homes that didn't have books before, taking the effort of literacy and raising it and trying to help kids have just better childhoods and be more literate as they get older here, getting some books into the homes into their homes. Barbara Bush, Houston Literacy Foundation, 66,551 the final tally. We thank all of you. Let's do headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Rocket season is over. They lose by 23 to the Lakers. I think 119-96 the final score. Yes, 119-96, like it matters. They go down in five games to the Los Angeles Lakers. Two straight series now for the Lakers where they lose game one and then go on to waylay the other team in the next four games. They're still awaiting their opponent. The Nuggets, for the second straight series, have come back from down 3-1 to take the series to a game seven. So that'll be tomorrow night. You get a game seven in the Western Conference semifinals to see who gets the right to play the Lakers. Meanwhile, back here in Houston, the Rockets are left to pick up the pieces, including Mike D'Antoni, who will no longer be an employee of the Houston Rockets. He becomes a head coaching free agent. He informed the team yesterday that he will not be renewing a contract here. He will have no shortage of suitors. The Sixers and the Pacers, two teams that have been tied closely to Mike D'Antoni. He used to be an assistant with Philadelphia back in the day. Two teams with some talent, too, in the Eastern Conference that could use Mike D'Antoni. Meanwhile, with the Rockets, James Harden, for what feels like the umpteenth straight closeout game press conference, says, well, we just need another piece.
I'm going to keep chipping away and keep going until I can't go anymore, you know. And we're a piece away, and, you know, we just got to keep trying to figure it out, keep trying to grow and put the right pieces around me and Russ to get to where we want to go.
Seth, I figured out who the other piece was, the missing piece. It's Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're Giannis Antetokounmpo away from being an NBA title.
That's Tomas Fertitta seems like the kind of guy that would just say, yeah, well, we're hell-bent for leather here. I don't care how much it costs. Luxury tax, never heard of it. Here we go, baby.
Yeah.
Full steam ahead.
Taxes be damned.
What? I don't know. Look, that's just one soundbite, but, you know, it was in that soundbite, let's just act like that's the only thing Harden ever said. Nowhere in there did he say that maybe Westbrook and myself need to play better or more consistently. It's just like, oh, that's all the pieces around me. That's all.
Yeah. So
I can't be bothered to, you know, move without the ball or anything like that. It's all, hey, I got double teamed, bro. That's it. End of story.
Yeah. I wonder where people are with the Rockets right now. You know, this, at some point, the repetitiveness of how the season closes out each year, that chips away at a fan base. So we'll see what happens.
It chips away at a fan base, and the thing about the Rockets is it's not like they've got a consistent bevy of stars. They've got their lovable role players that stick around for a few years at a time, and they've got James Harden, and everybody else is just a kind of revolving door through there. So I don't even know who to get to attach to.
I guess the one thing that they do have that has potential to at least give the fan base a shot of, you know, a B12 shot, would be hiring this head coaching hire. You know, this head coaching hire has a chance to be somebody that gets the fans excited. Sam Cassell seems to be somebody who Rocket fans at least are excited about because of his ties to the franchise and the glory days for this team.
Yeah, and I got to go and parse through some very, very positive things that people have said about Cassell as a coach. Because, like, sometimes that's just also a sign of a really good dude that people like a lot.
Yes, but Brian Shaw was the last one who got this sort of treatment. Remember Brian Shaw, who had been an assistant for the Lakers and was a teammate of Shaq and Kobe?
Yeah.
And those guys were stumping for him forever. And then, as it turned out, he was probably a better assistant coach than he was a head coach, as it turned out.
Yeah. But people are actually stumping for Sam Cassell as opposed to, I don't know, like Luke Walton. Yeah. The damn bastard.
So the Rockets season is now over, and we'll turn our attention to who they hire to be the next head coach. Meanwhile, the Astros, boy, they're a game and a half ahead of the Seattle Mariners right now for the second place spot in the AL West. Now, the good news is that the Astros schedule the rest of the way, now that the Dodgers are in the rear view, they lose 8-1 to the Dodgers last night, by the way, is that the Astros schedule is very, very easy over the next couple of weeks. The Mariners have a brutal schedule, including a doubleheader today against the Oakland A's. Root for the A's. Yeah, the Astros ain't catching the A's for first place. You need the A's to beat the Mariners to push them further in the rear view if you're into the Astros getting into the postseason. The other good bit of news is that Justin Verlander seems to be getting closer to getting back on a mound in an actual MLB game. Would Justin Verlander starting a game this season be a possibility?
If things go well, I mean, there's no better starter around than him. I mean, it's like making a major trade again, you know, getting him back. So yeah, I mean, you know, we're knocking on wood and keeping our fingers crossed that everything goes well and no setbacks, because we really don't have the time for it.
So would he maybe make one regular season start, and then if you guys are in the playoffs, he'd be ready for postseason?
I don't know that yet. You know, I hate to speculate that, but, you know, that's what we're planning on, so we'll see.
This is about the only thing that's keeping me going on the Astros right now, Seth, the possibility that Verlander could make a sports heroic comeback here.
That would be almost as legendary as Verlander coming in and saving the Astros after Harvey. You know,
yeah,
let's remember,
rescued the franchise.
The Astros weren't, it wasn't a matter of just like, oh yeah, the Astros were rolling along and then Harvey was kind of a hiccup and then they kept rolling along. It wasn't that way at all. The Astros were skidding a little bit. Yeah. And it was Verlander was part of just absolutely changing that team. So Verlander coming back at the end of the season or in the playoffs here, this would be like the equivalent of him coming into the dugout with his shirt off there.
Yeah.
In the playoffs and impelling the team
with
to
the
play
hairy
harder.
Shoulders and the dad arms, it made me feel better about myself. Hell yeah, I love that. That was a great moment.
The most relatable moment of an athlete to a fan base ever, because it looked like your dad telling everybody to play harder, and
the
it was
most
awesome.
Relatable athlete married to a supermodel that you'll find anywhere in sports, Justin Verlander. So the Astros, by the way, off tonight. They start a series with the Rangers at Minute Maid Park. Three-game series. They start tomorrow. Seth, the Big Ten, some developments over the weekend. And it was kind of cool getting a chance to sit down and watch some college football. You know, the schedule not chock full with the big names or anything like that. The SEC gets started in 2 weeks. That's when it'll start to feel a little bit more like a heavyweight prize fight card, when we start to see some of the really, really big names around college football. But it was pretty cool getting to flip channels around on Saturday and see some college football. The Big Ten, I would imagine, was feeling some of that over the past few days, and it looks like, if we had to put a probability on it, it looks likely that the Big Ten is set to return to play in the middle of October. The presidents of the schools met yesterday. They did not vote. There's an expectation that they're going to vote today. They've been presented with more information now as to how they can bring the game back onto the field, stage a 9-game regular season, and a Big Ten title game, and still be part of the college football playoff scene. So we will see today. But Seth, by the time you and I come in tomorrow, the Big Ten may be added to the college football playoff tapestry this year.
The last part is the part that just seems so unbelievable. I thought that they might pull something off where they're playing in indoor stadiums at neutral sites or something up north. And I thought that the boosters would have just come up big there. But to actually be part of the college football playoffs, now I wonder, they're up against a deadline here. How many games do they have to play for some of these teams to be taken seriously in the college football playoffs? Because I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair if Ohio State only plays 8 games, for instance, and then gets to enter the playoffs with 4 less games of wear and tear on their bodies.
Well, most of these teams that are playing right now are only playing 10 games, 11 at the most. The talk is the Big Ten would play a 9-game season plus a conference title game. The only team that's really in the running to get into the playoff out of the Big Ten is Ohio State. If Ohio State goes 9-0 and wins the Big Ten, then they deserve consideration for the playoff.
I don't trust that they're actually going to get the 9 games plus a conference playoff game.
I feel like the
timeline's too tight. Oh. But one of the other advantages they might have, even if they play the same amount of games, if they end up playing straight through the month of December and go right into the playoffs, they'll be potentially a lot sharper than the teams that have to sit around for a month and let their red shirts practice and scrimmage before they actually play a football game again.
Yeah, well, one of the things all these conferences have done that are playing is they've moved their title game back to December 19th. So they've all moved their title game back to the week before Christmas. So they've tried to make the schedule as accommodating as possible. You're right. I think it at least needs to be 9 games plus a conference title game for, let's face it, it's Ohio State that we're talking about here, for the Buckeyes to be taken seriously. Meanwhile,
and Northwestern,
and yes, if it's a spelling bee or a science fair, if either of those break out, yes. The other thing that happened college football wise this weekend, Seth, back in the day, you probably with your friends, you know, you'd play a pickup football game. Like, you call up some friends, hey, I got 5 guys over here, do you 5 want to go play some sandlot football somewhere in a couple of hours? Yes. And you go meet at some school playground somewhere and you play football. It feels like that's what Baylor and U of H are doing this weekend. Both of their opponents that they were supposed to play either this week or next week had COVID outbreaks, Louisiana Tech and Memphis. So Baylor and U of H are agreeing to go play in Waco this Saturday. And they've already got television lined up. Fox is going to televise this thing. It feels like a pickup game. This is so cool. It's like barnstorming.
It's pretty cool. You know, there was a time a long time ago where it wasn't such a big deal to have to arrange a football game.
Yeah.
You just that's how football was for a long time. You would just, high schools every now and then would play a college would play a pro team or a semi-pro team because you're looking for action. That's what these guys are doing. It harkens back to a simpler time, Sean.
Simpler time and place. Yeah, and, I mean, and it's not the
a simpler time when it was a better time, except for the vast quantities of people that had fewer human rights.
Right.
But other than that, it was an awesome time to be alive.
In college football, yeah. So it's not the Longhorns and the Aggies, but it is a former Southwest Conference matchup that we probably would not have gotten to have seen had they not scheduled this thing this week. And then if they get the game on the field on Saturday, they're going to do a home-and-home a little later on in the decade here. So that's all good. Seth, we are about out of time. Monday Night Football tonight, a doubleheader reminder. I'm imagine games you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. We're your home for NFL football here in the city of Houston. So we're done. Seth, antibodies to you. As we hand things over to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris.
Antibodies to you.
All right, thank you. Seth Payne.
That's it.
Appreciate that. Antibodies to all of you as well. Ben Gary, thank you for producing. Texans Monday is up next. We will see you all tomorrow at 6 a.m. Until then, have a great day, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.